This is NHPR News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Earlier this year, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments on the constitutionality of so-called buffer zones around abortion clinics. The case stemmed from a Massachusetts law saying protesters must stand 35 feet back from these facilities. Meanwhile, New Hampshire appears poised to adopt a similar law, requiring protesters stay 25 feet away. The bill's chief sponsor, Manchester Democratic Senator Donna Soucy, said it was in response to complaints about harassment of patients entering a local Planned Parenthood facility. Four Republicans joined Democrats in passing the measure, sending it to an already supportive House and governor. The Senate vote was a blow to abortion foes here, who lost on two other measures this session, one deeming that human life begins at conception, and another to tighten up clinic licensing. But these restrictions have become more common in many other states, with about two-thirds of new laws aimed at abortion passed just since 2010. Today in The Exchange, an update on the abortion debate, and let's hear from you. Which of these laws sounds reasonable to you and which don't, whether it's buffer zones, licensing requirements, or other restrictions? Also, what are some of these new laws around the country that we've seen say about American public opinion on abortion? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You can post a comment there if you'd like. With us in studio is Brian McCormick, Executive Director for Cornerstone, a conservative public policy think tank. And Brian, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Also with us, Laura Thibeau, Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice New Hampshire. And Laura, thank you also for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, and both of you, for the past 3 years, the trend nationwide has been toward restricting abortions, to the point where this year observers on both sides say we're at a key turning point. Either we could see more laws come forward to the point where Roe versus Wade could be heard by the Supreme Court and overturned, or we could see some pushback begin. What do you think, Laura Thibeau? Do you see us as a nation at a turning point? We could go either way on this.
Well, you know, it's been 41 years since the Roe v. Wade decision legalized abortion in this country. And since then, at least half of the states in the country have imposed excessive and unnecessary abortion restrictions. The number of abortion providers has declined. Fewer and fewer medical students are being trained to provide abortions. And more than half of the women in our country live in a state that has at least four major abortion restrictions, making abortion basically unattainable for these women. One in four women will have an abortion by the age of 30. This is a safe medical procedure sought by many women and supported by the strong majority of Americans who believe it must be safe and legal. Yet we've allowed an extreme minority to marginalize abortion, pushing it outside mainstream medicine and forcing many women in this country to travel great distances at great expense to access a legal medical procedure. So the trend is indeed to pass restriction after restriction, but it's being done in an overwhelmingly pro-choice country. So people are starting to take notice. More and more young women and men are recognizing that a right that they may have taken for granted is now at risk and are starting to get more involved. And so we are seeing, you know, the silver lining to all this is that people are beginning to pay attention. They are beginning to learn where their candidates stand on this important issue. And I think that we are going to start seeing the tide turn.
So you think we are at this turning point that many national observers see?
I think we are.
What do you think,
Absolutely.
Brian?
Well, I mean, you see, the way you phrased it as in a small minority of the United States, I would rephrase that. I'd say that it's a growing minority. I have no qualms with the fact that largely it is a pro-choice nation, and personally that's a sad thing. But, I mean, I've been involved with the pro-life movement for a while now, and seeing how many young people are adopting and saying there's something different now, this is a different opinion that's growing amongst young people. There is a tide of change, and you are seeing more regulation. You are seeing people pay attention on both sides of the issue, but you are seeing the pro-life movement grow. And you can see that based on what you see in D.C. on the Walk for Life. I mean, you're talking last year 500,000 people showing up for it. And this year, even bitter cold with temperatures below zero, 120,000, 150,000 people showing up for this. Support is growing. And there is a tide of change coming in the United States. In regards to the restrictions, we'll talk about this later in regards to what's happening in the state. A lot of what you're seeing is just kind of saying, okay, this procedure is here. We understand it's not going anywhere for right now. But how come it's not being treated as a medical procedure? How come we're not seeing licensing? How come we're not seeing reporting of the statistics? It's a very invasive procedure. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But how come we're not seeing anybody saying, let's take this seriously and let's find out if there have been complications. Let's find out if women do need more help, if they do need more support, if these places do need any more type of scrutiny. And in regards to barring abortions, I'd say it starts first with women's health.
You know, we're going to talk in a minute. I'm glad you raised the licensing requirements. We'll talk a little bit later in this show with a state representative who co-sponsored a bill for more licensing for abortion clinics here in New Hampshire. But a few more questions for you, if I could, please, on the whole public opinion and which way we're going and these laws that we've seen around the country. For you, Brian, first, you know, there's been a lot of notice to younger Americans and how the tide has really shifted when it comes to their feelings about gay marriage. And we see, you know, more and more support among young Americans, especially for same-sex marriage. But on abortion, not so much. Opinion really kind of seems stuck for the last 40 years.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's an issue, especially for, I mean, you're talking about a split even in liturgical communities. But the reality is that you're seeing a convergence now. You're seeing something change in the tides of a nation where people are coming together and saying, no, we pretty much agree on this. And it is a minority. Don't get me wrong. That I'm not saying that this is a tidal wave of change that, you know, we're sweeping into some type of majority. But from a younger perspective, as the dialogue increases, people are starting to say, you know what, we do kind of stand on the same page in this. We do stand on the same similar ground. And that's where that growing minority lies. But in regards to that vehemence that you're seeing with, like, the argument on gay marriage, there's a lot of ambiguity in regards to the differences that people find in how they see abortion as necessary or not. And you can even see that in the political spectrum. You see politicians who have lost their seats because of their stand or their take on abortion. And you're starting to see some of those differences weeded out.
You know, I got a question for you too, Laura. You said that, yes, we've seen restrictions in the last couple of years. You said at least half the states now have laws you consider very restrictive. And you said this is happening in what you called a pro-choice country. But line that up for us. I mean, if America was really as pro-choice as you see it, why would all these laws be on the books?
Well, anti-choice extremists, their singular goal is to overturn abortion, and they know the very best way to do this is to increase their numbers in the state house. So the more anti-choice bills that are passed, the greater chance for one of them to be heard before the Supreme Court. We have activists that are running on this issue. And as I said, more and more Americans are paying attention. But I think for some time, people have taken this right for granted. They've thought abortion is legal. I can access birth control. But what maybe they didn't realize is the numbers of anti-choice activists being elected are increasing. And those are the folks that are passing laws. So are they representing pro-choice Americans' values? No, they're not. And so overwhelmingly, voters support a woman's right to choose. We've seen that in poll after poll, particularly here in New Hampshire. There's an overwhelming majority of folks that understand that abortion needs to be safe and legal, but our lawmakers are not representing those values.
Well, and when you look at the map of the United States, New England does appear to be an outlier on this issue of abortion restrictions. Very few here in New Hampshire. Is that right, Laura?
Yes, that's true. New Hampshire has a long history of respecting women to make their own choices around this.
Let's hear from our listeners as well, if we could. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, we're getting an update on the abortion debate, both here in New Hampshire and nationally, given all the laws that are now on the books around the country and some debate in our legislature this year. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Jillian's up first from Hudson. Hi, Jillian. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
wanted to bring up a bill that's in the New Hampshire legislature right now that I'm really concerned about. It would consider a fertilized egg a person, so it's known as a personhood bill. And as someone who relies on an IUD for my contraceptives, you know, that's at risk because, you know, IUDs could become illegal with a personhood measure, and I'm just concerned about that here in New Hampshire.
Jillian, thanks for the call. And Brian, my understanding is that that personhood bill went down, that that's not active in New Hampshire this year. Is that right? Or you're shaking your head, Laura.
I got an ITL, an expedient to legislate recommendation. Yeah, it's going into the vote, so it hasn't been voted on yet.
Okay. And how do you feel about that bill? Would it deny contraceptive choices to people like Jillian?
I don't believe so. You're talking about defining an actual biological procedure. As soon as that sperm enters that ovum, you have a new strand of human DNA, and they're trying to define that. They're trying to nail that down and say, this thing is going to be nothing but a human being. It's not going to be a giraffe or a gorilla. It's going to be a human. And by putting it on the books and just identifying that all humans are created equal, it is just furthering that and saying this starts here at this point. I don't believe it's going to have an effect on contraception. That's a choice. That's something that someone can choose to do, and that's prior to that type of that insemination.
Yeah. So personhood bills, these have come up elsewhere too, Laura.
They've come up elsewhere. We've seen them before in New Hampshire. This bill would define personhood at conception. This gives legal rights to a fertilized egg. These measures are so far outside of the mainstream, they would not only outlaw abortion, but many forms of birth control, stem cell research, in vitro fertilization.
So, and what I'm hearing is, just got some information, the licensing bill, which we're going to talk about in a moment, was inexpedient to legislate ITL. The other bill, the personhood bill, is still in committee. And as I understand, there's a vote tomorrow on this. So that's just the latest. There's a lot to keep track of. We'll talk more after a super short break. The exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR is trying to keep our upcoming March fund drive as brief as possible, which is why on day one of the drive, we're planning to raise the entire day's goal in just 4 hours. Your donation now will count toward the tally and help us collect $10,000 in challenge money. Support the new service you love at nhpr.org. More on an update on the abortion debate on The Exchange and a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the political crisis in Ukraine, with latest developments and analysis. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from the Melanson Company of Keene and Bow. 80 years of providing comprehensive roofing solutions, now offering solar energy solutions, including roof-integrated systems, Melanson.com. And Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield in New Hampshire, proud to support a broad range of nonprofits like New Horizons for New Hampshire. Details at newhorizonsnh.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, an update on the abortion debate in New Hampshire and around the country. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests are Brian McCormick, Executive Director for Cornerstone, a conservative public policy think tank, and Laura Tebow, Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice New Hampshire. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And Laura, I wanted to ask you about a bill that does seem to be moving forward here in New Hampshire, and that's the buffer zone bill. What does current law in New Hampshire say about this, Laura, and how would the bill change it?
Well, so we're referring to it as the patient safety zone. It's Senate Bill 319, and we're in strong support of this. It's an unfortunate reality that anti-choice protesters can pose a serious threat to the safety of patients and medical professionals. Unfortunately, we've seen that across the country. Acts of violence against abortion providers, bombings, arsons, threats. You know, we cannot afford to have even one act of violence against a woman in New Hampshire or a provider of abortion care. So we strongly support creating a 25-foot patient safety zone around reproductive health centers. And, you know, what's great about this bill is that it balances the rights of free speech with public safety and the safety of women and providers.
How do you feel about this bill, Brian?
Well, we're working in direct opposition to it. And this is a First Amendment issue. You're talking about individuals who are standing in silent prayer on the sidewalks. I'd just like to point out also that there is a federal statute protecting abortion facilities. And in New Hampshire, it has not been enacted once. So in regards to one woman being harmed, and I also want to say to that point, that's a tragedy. That conversation needs to happen. We do not stand behind those actions whatsoever, and anyone who does operate as such deserves the full measure of the law. And quite frankly, it's also the people who do stand in silent prayer's responsibility to keep that way.
How do you feel about the fact that four Republicans kind of put this over the top in the state Senate? The Democrats were all for it, but enough Republicans joined them to send it on to the House, which is seen as very favorable, and the governor, who is also seen as favorable.
It's shocking, to be honest with you. I've been involved in politics in the state here for a couple of years now, and to see some of the names that were on that vote, it really was shocking.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look at some of the abortion bills being debated in the New Hampshire legislature, and we're also putting this in the national context. For more now on the buffer zone bill is Jen Frizzell. She's New Hampshire's senior policy advisor for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. And Jennifer, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, your organization collected a lot of the testimony that was used at the hearing in favor of this buffer zone bill. What did you hear from people?
Well, you know, we have collected over 60 patient complaints since the beginning of 2013 because we have seen an escalating amount of protest activity at the health centers and particularly in Manchester. So we collected stories from patients who have felt that their physical space is violated when they're trying to get out of their cars or trying to walk on the sidewalk in order to enter the health center. And by physical space violated, I mean protesters who come right up in their space within 2 or 3 feet, push literature on them, scream intimidating and harassing remarks at them. And we have heard from individuals who feel like their safety and the privacy of their obtaining health care is jeopardized by the behavior of some of these protesters. And I do want to acknowledge for certain that not all of the protesters utilize these objectionable tactics. There are regulars who come and are prayerful, but as has been mentioned, you know, this buffer zone law, this patient safety measure will provide a practical balance to ensure that both the free speech rights and the right to medical privacy are given an equal place in our public policy consideration.
Just a couple more quick questions for you, Jen. Some have said, look, local laws already give local authorities, local police, the ability to deal with intimidating protesters, to use your term. So is this buffer zone really needed? Because that shuts out the folks who are also quietly praying and does raise the First Amendment questions that Brian raises.
Well, I would argue that, in fact, we do not have sufficient local provisions. We have been working with the Manchester Police Department around some incident reports that we've needed to file. And I know there have been similar conversations at the Concord City Council around these issues. And so I think, first of all, we feel like a statewide approach is warranted, so we would have equal standards for protection. And then I would question the assertion that the laws and the protections that we have currently are adequate. We wouldn't be moving forward with this measure if we didn't think we needed more tools in the hands of law enforcement and municipal officials to maintain public order and protect patients.
And one more question that came up, Jen. As you know, Massachusetts' own buffer zone law is before the U.S. Supreme Court. Some people said, look, let's just wait to see what the high court decides instead of moving forward with this, because if the high court takes a particular point of view, New Hampshire might have to change its law. So why not wait?
Well, I think should the Supreme Court establish new guidelines for patient safety zones, then this bill could be amended to reflect the latest landscape. But in the meantime, we should act without delay to put protections in place for patients who are being impacted every day and every week in New Hampshire. That wait could take as long as 12 months to 18 months, and it's not like the legislature to wait for permission from the court when they feel like their constituents are in need of their public protection.
Okay. Jennifer Frizzell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jen Frizzell, New Hampshire Senior Policy Advisor for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. The number for you to join us as we look at abortion bills here in New Hampshire and the many new laws that have passed around the country is 1-800-892-6477. How do you feel about the possibility of buffer zones around clinics here in the Granite State? And what about some of the restrictions that have passed nationwide? Which sound right to you? If any. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Brian McCormick, Laura Thibault, let's go right back to our listeners. And John's calling in from Manchester. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I want to thank everybody for taking up this very important issue. My daughter, 17 years old, and she's pro-life. And she's going to be going off to college next year. And she will undoubtedly, be involved in one way or another in the debate, I'm sure. And I just tried to caution her to learn and both sides of the issue and try to get, the perspective of those that are pro-choice, and in order to be able to, my concern is, and it goes back to my, I understand those that are pro-choice. I am pro-life, but if we are going to overturn it or anything like that.
Roe v. Wade, you mean, John? Yeah, go ahead.
With the issue of taking care of, let's say, adoption, all those issues, the money involved. That is a big issue. And
but you would like to see Roe v. Wade overturned, John?
Yeah, it's not that simple.
Yeah.
I wish it was. I believe that life begins at the moment of conception. But as a pro-choice person here, discussed, it's very, very complex.
Well, John, thank you, for calling in. And what do you think, both of you, he's talking about his own conflicts. That was really interesting to hear. Brian, also getting back to this younger demographic, there's his 17-year-old daughter and is not in favor of abortions.
And as I said, you're seeing that demographic grow. I'll be honest with you. I believe that you should know both sides of the argument in any case. And I applaud him for encouraging his daughter to do so. But inside of it, you're right, it is a very complex issue. It deserves a lot of attention and a lot of close study. Inside of that, you're seeing that with the younger people. They're starting to think about it. They're starting to think about what does personhood mean? What does it mean for it to begin at conception? Is that a truth or is that something that is a farce? And as people start to look at that and really dig into it and identify with the fact that that new DNA, that new strain of DNA that's created in that moment is going to be nothing but a person. You're seeing it grow, the opinion.
Laura, and again, hearing the conflict in our caller's voice, and thank you, John, for calling in. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong. From what I've seen of the polling, Americans who say in general they support abortion do tend to support some sort of restrictions around, whether it's later during the pregnancy or younger women, teenage girls, do they need parental permission or not? What do you guys see in terms of restrictions that most Americans seem comfortable with? Or do you think most Americans think abortion should be, readily available to anyone who wants it?
Well, it's not a black and white issue.
Exactly.
Many of us struggle with our own personal feelings about abortion, whether you feel that it's right or wrong or you feel that it's something you choose for yourself. Again, most Americans know that it must be safe and legal. We know this from history. And we know that women will suffer if it's not. And so, going back to to young men and women, we have a great example here in New Hampshire in the not so recent past the anti-choice O'Brien administration really started attacking not only abortion but birth control. And we saw young men and women come out in droves really feeling like their rights were being threatened. Wait a minute, you know, my access to contraception may be threatened. So for many young men and women who have grown up with, you know, maybe taking these rights for granted, abortion has always been legal, are now seeing, wait a minute, you know, my rights are threatened, you know, they're questioning whether contraception should be covered by my insurance. And so we are seeing more young women and men getting involved, again, as they feel that their own rights are being threatened.
This is under House Speaker Bill O'Brien. You're saying that's when the trend sort of swung the other way in New Hampshire. And then you're saying young people reacted to that? And
absolutely reacted. We had lots and lots of young people contacting us, saying, you know, what can I do? I understand that they want to make, you know, it harder for me to access family planning services. You know, funding was being taken away. There was initiative that contraception should not be covered by insurance. And so it brought out a lot of young folks who are still very active and watching this issue closely.
Well, and joining us now on the phone is John Seborowski. He's a Republican representative from Bedford, and he co-sponsored a bill for more licensing for abortion facilities. This is another type of law that we've seen around the country recently, and with Representative Seborowski's bill here in New Hampshire. And Representative Seborowski, thanks a lot for making some time out for us this morning. We appreciate it.
Oh, very happy to do that, Faith. Happy to join you.
How would this bill change current law, Representative Seborowski? And why do you think it was needed?
Well, the focus of the bill, of House Bill 1501, is, as you know, licensing of outpatient abortion facilities. And I signed on as one of the 10 co-sponsors for a couple of reasons. One, I spent most of my business career in the hospital and medical technology environment. So I've scrubbed into the OR on numerous occasions. And I've got great respect for the rigor and the protocols that exist in hospitals and outpatient surgical centers. And I've got four daughters and I've got 11 grandchildren. And I'm a Marine combat veteran who has watched a lot of men die. So I've got a great respect for life. But this bill is all about women's health and women's safety. And that's the primary reason I signed on, Faith, as co-sponsor. The whole intent here is to further.
Yeah, what would it do to change current law? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry?
What would it do to change current law?
Well, what it would do is we would license these facilities. There's a lot of questions. You know, right now it's kind of, these facilities are kind of treated as a stealthy carve-out, if you will. There's a lot of things that need to be thought about, a lot of questions that need to be asked. For example, you know, in regard to sterilization, what's the daily rigor in handling reusables and disposables? How about preoperative procedure testing, testing for comorbidities? How about procedural room staffing patterns? How about the requirements for appropriate documentation? How about ensuring the competency of the medical staff? How about adverse events? How are they handled? And the recovery phase, also equally important. You know, we are invading someone's body. This is a highly invasive procedure. I think your listeners can visualize that.
So, Representative Seborowski, are you saying that right now these sort of watchovers are not happening at abortion clinics that would happen at a regular medical facility?
I would say no. I mean, in the interest of safety, Faith, let's treat these facilities, you know, like we treat, you know, so many other healthcare facilities in the state, hospitals, ambulatory surgical centers, walk-in care centers, birthing clinics. You know, they're all licensed. You know, let's treat them all the same. Let's not have a carve-out here. Let's ensure, you know, for the sake of safety and furthering safeguards, in assuring safeguards, you know, that we're operating at the highest possible level of safety to protect New Hampshire women.
And Representative Seborowski, sure. And one last question for you, please. As I understand, this bill was what's called ITL, inexpedient to legislate. Is that right?
Yes, it was. It was ITL'd in committee, and when it gets to the floor of the House, I know there'll be a debate on it, and I'm one of the individuals who signed up currently to debate it. I really do believe, you know, we need this. We have to do everything we possibly can to ensure that women's health and safety is at the forefront in New Hampshire.
Okay. Representative Ciborowski, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll keep an eye on what happens with this bill. Thanks for
your
time.
Greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much, Faith.
You're welcome. Take care. John Ciborowski, Republican representative from Bedford, again, co-sponsored a bill for more licensing requirements for abortion facilities. And we're heading into a break, Laura Thibault, but I did want to ask you about the bill and the sentiment behind it. We've seen bills like this elsewhere, so he's not the first person to have these concerns. What do you think? Are clinics that provide abortions not subject to the same strict regulatory and oversight that regular health facilities are?
Absolutely not. So these trap bills or targeted regulation of abortion provider bills, they're making their way across the country, and they're designed to increase the cost or eliminate altogether access to safe legal abortion care. They single out reproductive health care centers for onerous requirements. The requirements are unnecessary, and they do not apply to other medical professionals. It's just one more tactic used to marginalize abortion providers. We've seen the repercussions of these laws in other states where healthcare centers have been shuttered. Women are left without services, including all the other preventive services that these centers provide, cancer screenings, breast cancer screenings. So the supporters of these bills pretend to be concerned about women's health, but these types of bills actually push women farther and farther back into the back alley.
So what do you think is driving these? Just purely a desire to reduce the number of abortions? Because you hear genuine sounding concern in Representative Ciborowski's voice. He's got daughters, and he just wants to make sure that these are properly licensed, so nothing bad happens.
Honestly, I think they inflame the debate. I think it puts out there that, you know, more propaganda that, you know, these services are not safe, which is absolutely not true.
The phone number for you to join our conversation after a short break is 1-800-892-6477. Both of you, in just a moment, will continue our conversation looking at some of the other bills in other legislatures around the country. I've also got a stack of emails and some phone calls I want to share with you. So a lot more conversation coming up. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the political crisis in Ukraine, latest developments and analysis, then renewed debate over Common Core educational standards and testing. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather for today, mostly sunny with high temperatures from teens to mid-20s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from North Branch Construction, celebrating 56 years in business, from custom-built homes to eco-friendly commercial buildings, on time, on budget, on Facebook, LinkedIn, and northbranch.net. And Granite State College, Office of Graduate Studies, offering flexible schedules, faculty of expert practitioners, and curriculum focused on individual student goals. granite.edu/NHPR. 940, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at abortion bills here in New Hampshire and many new restrictions that have passed around the country. Join us with your questions, comments, and thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. As New Hampshire appears ready to approve a possible buffer zone around abortion clinics, how do you feel about that law? Also, some of the restrictions that we've talked about that have been happening elsewhere in the country, what restrictions sound right to you, whether it's licensing facilities or saying that abortions can only happen very early in the pregnancy, and some of the other laws that we've seen nationwide. Join us with your thoughts, questions, comments. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Brian McCormick, Executive Director for Cornerstone, and Laura Thibault, Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice New Hampshire. Both of you right back to our callers, and Wayne's waiting in Bedford. Hi, Wayne. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange, and thanks for being with us.
Morning. Good morning. This is Dr. Wayne Goldner, and I actually am a board-certified OBGYN doing abortions in the state of New Hampshire for 32 years. I've been threatened. I've had my house picketed. I've had my office picketed. So I think I have a little understanding of this, and Laura was exactly correct in what she said, is these laws do nothing more than restrict a woman's access to abortion. Legislatures shouldn't be doing medicine. I am very well regulated. There are more regulations around the practice of medicine than you can possibly imagine. Representative Zebrowski, who has been against expansion of Medicaid, really said some things that weren't exactly correct medically. Women's health and safety in terms of abortions is very well protected, and it's one of the safest procedures done in the United States, in the world. We do report statistics. Brian said things that we don't report statistics. Statistics are known. Abortions are safe. I do things and procedures in my office that are far more dangerous than abortions, and that's been in all OBGYN offices and in many clinics around the country. So I'm sort of upset at these continued attacks on women's rights, whereas we know that these laws do nothing more than endanger women by increasing the time it takes for them to get the procedure, which they will get one way or the other, and therefore increasing their dangers, because as abortions get later in pregnancy, they do become more dangerous. So I'd like to hear Brian's response to that, in that actually, also for Brian's information, the number of abortions in the United States is going down dramatically. We are now at the lowest since 1973.
Yeah, I saw that those numbers recently from the Guttmacher Institute. Wayne, thanks a lot for calling in. Brian, he directed his questions at you, so go ahead, please. And then I did want to ask both of you about those new numbers that show the abortion rate in this country is going down pretty dramatically.
Oh, thank you for your question, Doctor. And I'd just like to clarify, you are correct. Across the United States, a lot of abortion facilities and states report their statistics. New Hampshire is an outlier in that. There is no mandate to report statistics, and we have the least reporting in the United States currently amongst three other states. So that's really particular to the state, so I'll clarify that comment earlier. In regards to the comments on the safety of women here, if that's the case, then why is there a problem with licensing? Why is there a problem with anyone coming in and saying, let's make sure everyone is doing their job appropriately and properly? There is nothing to hide if that's the case. In regards to the statistics as well, why is it such a – why are we twisting arms to try and get people to report these things? Currently, there is no mandate. There's no type of leverage. And inside of that, how come they're not reported? How come there is no transparency here? And I'm sure as a doctor, you are fairly regulated. I believe that. I know that across the board, as far as the medical arena goes, that is an issue. But in regards to these facilities, you're talking about what is, just as Representative Zebrowski mentioned, an outlier. It's different. It isn't a hospital. You're talking about abortion facilities. You're talking about quote-unquote reproductive health facilities that are not under the same restrictions and regulations. And we're trying to bring in and say, okay, why don't we pay attention to this? Why don't we look into how women are affected, what's happening in the state, where they're happening, if they need more help, if they need more assistance. It is a woman's health issue.
I did want to ask about the numbers that he mentioned, but I need to let you two jump in, Laura Thibault. The least, New Hampshire doesn't report as much as other states around the country.
There's no mandatory reporting in New Hampshire right now. We do not oppose the collection of statistics regarding abortion. However, it's imperative that we collect the statistics in a way that does not place providers or the women seeking abortion at risk. And so the bills that we've seen over and over and over again introduced in New Hampshire do not protect the identity of women and providers.
So numbers are fine, but no names attached.
Absolutely. And abortion providers in the state obviously have data they already collected. They voluntarily provide it to the Guttmacher Institute, which is a bipartisan independent organization that collects statistics across the country and across the world and reports those trends. So, you know, again, we do not oppose, obviously, the collection of statistics, but it has to be done. I mean, we've heard lots today about the targeting of abortion providers, the violence, intimidation, and harassment of women who seek abortion. We must protect the privacy and anonymity of those who both provide the service and seek the service. And if it can be done in a way that protects that identity, then we would not oppose such a bill.
Brian, go ahead, and then I want to ask both of you about the Guttmacher.
Yeah, and I want to mention this as well regarding the doctor's comments on him being threatened. That's unacceptable, and I'm sorry that that's something that needs to be shared on the show. It shouldn't happen. in regards to, you know, we stand on different sides of this issue in this room right now, and we can sit here and have a level-headed conversation about it. There's no reason that that can't happen. And so I'm sorry that you had to go through that. In regards to the reporting of statistics, there is no attempt, as far as Cornerstone goes or as far as this movement goes, to try and single anybody out.
To out people who've had abortions.
We want the statistics. Demographically speaking, that can be extremely useful information for the state. In fact, above, say, Concord in the North Country, we have no idea what's going on up there. That's a tough area. They're struggling. We know that. And statistics like these can help us help those people.
Well, speaking of statistics, the Guttmacher Institute that measures the abortion rate and, as you said, is trusted for its number keeping, measured the abortion rate in 2011 and found that it was at one of the lowest levels in a long, long time, 16.9 abortions per 1,000 women of childbearing age, compared to 19.4 just in 2008, not that long ago. So that's a pretty big decline, Laura, in just a couple of years. What do you think is behind that drop?
I think it's directly related to greater education, greater access to contraception, better funding for contraception. We know that the overall pregnancy rate is not declining, and so the unintended pregnancy rate is. And that is directly related to better access to contraception.
What do you think, Brian? What's behind that pretty dramatic drop we've seen just in the last couple of years?
I'm going to go back to what I said previously, that you are seeing a younger generation address this issue very differently. They are thinking about it differently. They're taking facts into it differently. Where they're getting their information, I cannot be exactly positive about. But I know that in my conversations, in the places that I've gone to talk to these individuals who are of a younger bent, that conversation is very different than it used to be. It isn't about the choice. It isn't about, you know, a rights-based conversation saying, well, I think this looks a little bit different. I think that personhood starts at an earlier stage than we've known all along or talked about all along.
Thanks for that call, Wayne. And let's take another one from New London. Carrie's calling in. Hi, Carrie. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a physician that works in OBGYN and pediatric health and women's health for over 20 years. And I was taken by the congressman, the Republican senator, I may be wrong about that, his comments about licensing and ensuring that these women's health facilities are licensed and there is some oversight. Infection in women is seen often. We see young girls in our clinic on a weekly basis who come in with infections. Now, we don't have their complete history in terms of have they been to Planned Parenthood, that sort of thing, because we don't have access to all that information, and sometimes they don't provide it. But any hospital and any physician would not shy away from having their clinic licensed. These are outpatient surgical facilities. They are doing surgery. I would like to see that all women and children in New Hampshire are protected.
Carrie, good to hear from you. Two doctors chiming in on this from opposite sides. What do you think, Laura Thibault?
Again, I think it's outrageous to say that facilities in New Hampshire that are providing abortion are unlicensed. It's just not true. They undergo the same licensing that any other medical professional has to go through, and there's no reason that they should be held to a different standard than other hospitals, medical providers. It's simply not necessary, and it's clearly a way to put a lens on abortion services in New Hampshire to target providers and, as we've seen in other states, make the requirements so onerous that these clinics can no longer stay in business and have to close their doors.
Carrie, thanks a lot for the call. Let's take another one from Plymouth. Susan's on the air. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to the show, and in the spirit of time, I'll just summarize my comments by saying this. We're talking about two sides of an issue, and each time I hear one of the people on the show or the caller saying that, I get a knot in my stomach, because there really aren't two sides to a woman's decision about what she's going to do with a pregnancy, any more than there are two sides to a family making a decision about when they're going to stop keeping somebody alive on a ventilator. I think that we need to be really, really careful that in our political conversation about this issue, we don't forget, in fact, that we remind ourselves that this is not a two-sided issue when it happens in the body and the heart and the mind and the soul of a single woman. And secondly, the issue around health insurance coverage almost makes me want to cry because I walk by people every day in shops buying cigarettes and beer while I'm buying kale and a yoga mat. And I know that my dollars go to support those people in making health decisions as well and receiving health care. So that is a moot point for all of us. But again, the issue is it's a one-sided issue inside of one woman.
Susan, thank you for the comment. And Brian, I'll throw that one to you. What do you think?
I respect the caller's comments. But when you're talking about two different sides, you're talking about two different opinions. And it is one action. You're right. It is going on within one woman and with one child. But you have people who disagree on it. And I'm not going to sit here and say that there's only one opinion. There are two separate opinions. We're sitting here in this room discussing that. The fact of it being a one individual with one instance happening doesn't mean that people can't have an opinion in opposition or for it. And that's just the reality of the situation.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that call. I don't know if you want to jump in or not.
Well, I think what the caller is pointing to is that this is a deeply personal decision. And so how can we expect politicians to be making these decisions for women when it is not a black and white issue? Every woman has to search within themselves for the right answer, and it can't be legislated. So I actually agree with the caller, and it's not black and white. There's lots of shades of gray, and that is specifically why we need to leave it in the hands of women in consultation with those they trust, not in the hands of lawmakers.
Well, and a couple of emails I'd just like to share with you. In the few minutes that we have left, here's one from Rob. He says, I'm a Republican. I feel we are on the wrong side of the buffer zone bill. I've seen the evidence of the harassment that takes place outside these clinics. Whether you agree with legal abortion or not, it is legal and women should not be harassed, not to mention escalation to violence, which has occurred. Protest to your elected officials, but leave the women who disagree with you alone, describing all protesters as silent prayers is disingenuous. So there's a comment on the buffer zone bill. Brian, I wonder if just to have any quick thoughts there, and then I have another email I want to share with you, Laura.
I couldn't disagree more. This is it's a First Amendment issue. If individuals who have to cross a picket line are defending their First Amendment rights to stand in even violent protest, why is it that people are standing in silent protest in front of these facilities who are standing on things they believe in, things that they have a right to express? They're being forced across the street. They're being forced 25 feet away. When to echo Sam Cataldo's comments when this was in its hearing, he said, I had to cross that line. I got beat up. How come they weren't pushed 25 feet across the street? And I'll make a point to the buffer zone right now and regarding what's here to protect the people who are out of line in front of any type of facility. And again, I want to reference the fact that under the federal statute, no one has been prosecuted in the state of New Hampshire. But inside of that, you have to go and get a permit in order to stand in front of these places. And if you don't have it, you can be removed. Not even across the street, you have to be asked to leave completely. And so inside of his comment, yes, abortion is legal, but there are people who disagree with the practice. And they have a right to go ahead and voice that disagreement.
And here's an email that I want to share with you, Laura. This is from Andrew in Peterborough. Kind of relates to what our earlier caller said, who felt there was not two sides to this issue. Andrew seems to feel that there are two sides. He says, how does NARAL define freedom of choice for unborn females with the possibility of the taking of the lives of the same unborn females through abortion? Andrew says, do not the unborn females also suffer? So, you know, I know you disagree with this comment, but I just wonder what you think about Andrew's feelings there, that there are two sides, the woman who's pregnant, but also the unborn child.
Well, you know, this is, again, it's really not black and white. This is a very divisive issue, and I think that people are tired. I think they're tired of the arguments. We feel that, you know, this has been decided. Abortion is legal. It must stay safe and legal. And people want to move on. We want to move on to the issues that are facing our country, to the issues that are facing our state that are more pressing, and, you know, move away from the divisive attacks And really, you know, I think people want to see lawmakers working on things that are more important than debating whether or not abortion and birth control should be accessible to women.
And speaking of lawmakers here in New Hampshire, Laura, it sounds like this buffer zone bill is going to go forward. And the other two bills we talked about, the clinic licensing and the personhood, are not going forward. Is that your
assessment? We expect that they will be defeated
assessment.
As they've been in the past. That's correct.
And how about you, Brian?
And that's something I wanted to reference earlier. We kind of missed it after one of the breaks. New Hampshire's an outlier. We, as far as the abortion movement goes, we kind of stand outside of the norm. And yeah, I agree. We're probably going to see these things come through. That's sad to us, but we're trying to change the winds in the state in regards to this issue.
Well, both of you, thank you very much for being here. Not an easy conversation. I really appreciate you giving me your time. Brian, thank you for your time. That's Brian McCormick, Executive Director for Cornerstone. And Laura Thibault, thank you also for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Laura Thibault, Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice New Hampshire. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Nate Graby. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange on NHPR. Every day, you turn to The Exchange for thoughtful, timely, and in-depth discussions of the issues that matter to you. And every day, we turn to you for your thoughts, opinions, and personal stories. It's the healthy exchange of ideas that makes for great conversation and debate. Join me for New Hampshire's only statewide call-in program and become part of The Exchange, weekdays at 9 on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio with the Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock. New Hampshire weather mostly sunny for today. High temperatures from teens to mid-20s. Mostly clear tonight and cold. Lows around 18 below in northern Coos County, ranging to around zero along the Mass border. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Comcast Business, continuously investing to keep customers ahead of the technology curve. Comcast Business is built for business. More at business.comcast.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVU Concord.
89.1. WEVS Nashua.
88.3. WEVH Hanover.
91.3. WEVN Keene.
90.7. WEVC Gorham.
107.1. WEVJ Jackson.
99.5. WEVF Colebrook.
90.3. And WEVQ Littleton.
91.9. And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Tom Gelton of NPR, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Moscow's foreign minister today said Russian troops will remain in Ukraine until the political situation normalizes. Over the weekend, major world powers condemned Russia's occupation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is expected to be in Kiev tomorrow.